The month of Nisan used to be called, before Galus Bavel, it used to be called Chodesh HaRishon, the first month, because the Jewish calendar starts when we left Egypt, in the month that we left Egypt. That was our birth as a nation, and so that also is the first month in the calendar, not from the creation of the world, which is a universal first month, but rather from the particular first month of our existence as a nation. Nisan was the first month that we, the Jewish people, existed as a nation, and so therefore, forever, it's called the first month. And we went to Bavel, and to commemorate the redemption from Bavel, we began to use the Babylonian names, of the months. But prior to that, in the Torah, all over the Torah, Nisan is referred to as Chodesh HaRishon, the first month. One of the things that we do at the beginning of Nisan is we give something called Ma'os Chitim, which is literally, it means wheat money, but the real definition of what Ma'os Chitim are is money that we give out to poor people to help them pay for Pesach expenses. Matzah is very expensive, kosher, the Pesach products are very expensive. In general, people have to buy more than usual in order to pay for all of the Sedarim and the Yontif meals, and to make sure that people have enough, we give Ma'os Chitim to the rabbis. The rabbis usually know who in the community is needy, and could use that type of influx of cash. At the Seder, we invite everybody to come in and eat with us, and it would be kind of hypocritical if we didn't take care of the poor people as the Seder came around. So that's Ma'os Chitim at the beginning of Nisan. We try to give charity so that everybody can have a proper, enjoyable, meaningful Pesach Seder. When is Shabbos HaGadol? Shabbos HaGadol is the name that we give to the Shabbos right before Pesach. Shabbos HaGadol commemorates an interesting anniversary that in Egypt, on the Shabbos before Pesach, or really I should say the 10th day of Nisan, the Jews took a lamb and tied it to their bed in preparation for bringing the Karban Pesach. They took the lamb 4 days in advance in preparation for bringing the Karban Pesach. And, of course, the Egyptians, they wandered by the Jewish houses and they were puzzled, what's this sheep for? And the Jews would say, oh, we're going to slaughter it as a Karban in 4 days from now. And, the Egyptians worshipped sheep, and under regular circumstances, they would have punished the Jews very cruelly for their presumption in taking a sheep and planning to slaughter it. But, because this was already at the end of the Ten Makos, they didn't do anything to us. This was an incredible miracle. It happened, on the first Shabbos HaGadol, the first Shabbos that preceded, the first Pesach. And so we commemorate that by doing special things on Shabbos HaGadol, long speech, reviewing the Haggadah, etc. That's really what it commemorates. What are three reasons for the name Shabbos HaGadol? So the first reason is that a big miracle happened on that Shabbos, that the Egyptians felt powerless to stop us from bringing the Karban Pesach. The second reason it's called Shabbos HaGadol is because in the Haftorah of Shabbos HaGadol, it says, it uses the words Lefnei Bo Yom Hashem HaGadol VeHanora. That's a reference to the coming of Mashiach. It's called Yom Hashem HaGadol. And so we name the Shabbos after that highlight of the Haftorah, which is the word HaGadol. The third reason why it's called Shabbos HaGadol is because it's customary for the rabbi to give a speech in shul on Shabbos. The rabbi is usually the greatest scholar in town, and therefore it's called Shabbos HaGadol. Again, and nowadays rabbis give speeches every Shabbos, but in the olden days, the rabbis would only give a speech on Shabbos HaGadol and maybe one other week of the year. And so since this was a Shabbos, that the rabbi gets extra attention, that the greatest scholar, the Gadol, right, the Chacham HaGadol, gets the most attention, so it's also called Shabbos HaGadol. When we eat matzah, So it's connected with the pasuk Zacharti lach chesed ne'urayich ahavas kilulo sayich lechtich acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo zirua. That's a pasuk that they've made into a beautiful song. We sing it usually during Musaf on Rosh Hashanah. Ko'amar Hashem zacharti lach chesed ne'urayich. And this is what the pasuk means, and this is how it's connected to matzah. I remember for you the kindness of your youth, the love of when we were first engaged, right? That you followed me into the desert, the land which is not planted. And the idea over here is that Hashem told the Jews, come out into the desert, I'll take care of you. Don't worry about the danger. Don't worry about starving. Don't worry about, you know, dying of thirst. I'm going to take care of you. And so when the time got closer for the Jews to leave Egypt, they didn't even bother to prepare things for themselves. They didn't pack away provisions. They didn't, you know, hoard things or store them away. No, they just came with one day's, you know, supply, you know, of food. They didn't even bake it, you know, in advance. And that was the matzah. And so the fact that, you know, the Jews departed for the desert without even having baked supplies in advance, because they trusted that Hashem was going to provide for them, the matzah is a reminder of their bitachon in Hashem, that they didn't have any food that had been baked in preparation for their departure for the desert. They trusted that Hashem was going to provide for their needs. But when we eat matzah on Pesach and at the Seder, we're reenacting and commemorating that tremendous act of faith, the chesed, the kindness that Hashem, that the Jews, you know, showed to Hashem, the love that they showed for him, the faith and the trust that they placed in him by following him into the desert, even though there was no food there. Obviously, the matzah also commemorates Hashem's kindness to us, because we know that we did survive and thrive in the desert. He did provide us, you know, with the man and slav and various, you know, other things that we need, the be'er, the well of Miriam for water. And so the matzah also commemorates not just our trust and faith, but also the fact that Hashem came through for us. What are three ways that the Isser of Chametz is more strict than other prohibitions? Because we know that it is more strict than many other types of non-kosher. One of the ways that it's more strict is that it carries a chiyuv kares. Anybody who eats chametz on Pesach is subject to a very strict penalty, a kares penalty. The second way that it's more strict is that it's not batel b'shishim. Usually if you have something not kosher, let's say a bug that falls into a chalent, if there's more than 60 times kosher volume than non-kosher volume, you know, there's 60, you know, pieces of chalent for every one piece of bug, the entire mixture is permitted. But when it comes to chametz, we do not say that. Even if it's 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 1,000,000, a tiny crumb of chametz can ruin a soup that's a million times bigger than the crumb. The entire thing becomes non-kosher. So that's a second way that chametz is more strict than other prohibitions. The third way that chametz is more strict than other prohibitions is that if a Jew owns chametz over Pesach, that chametz remain forbidden after Pesach. That means that if your local grocery store is owned by a Jew, then the products on the shelves, if they didn't, you know, do a regular sale of chametz, then the products that remain on the shelves that have been on the shelves over Pesach, you can't buy them after Pesach either, until their entire inventory, you know, turns around, because chametz she'avar olav haPesach is also considered to be something which is asur. So that's the third way in which chametz is more strict than other isurim. There is a fourth way as well, which I should have put on the sheet, and that is that other isurim, person has got something not kosher, okay, so they have it, you know, in their basement or their attic or their front lawn or storage room, and they're not violating any avera by owning the non-kosher. The isur is to eat it. But when it comes to chametz, there's an isser of bal yira'e and bal yimatze, that no chametz should be seen on Jewish property over Pesach. No chametz should be found in Jewish property over Pesach. And so that's another way in which chametz is more strict than ordinary types of non-kosher. We talked about, in order to prevent and to avoid the isser of chametz, there is three different things that we do to keep ourselves safe. One of them is called hashbasas chametz, and what that means is that I change my worldview about chametz. I declare them to be worthless to me, like the dust of the earth. And that's what hashbasas chametz is that basically I make a declaration, and I try to really mean it, that I declare my chametz ownerless and worthless to me. If I see the most delicious, drakes, ringding, right, or entomins, donut, it's chametz, and I should have as much taiva, as much appetite for the entomins donut as I would have to eat dust. That's how we look at chametz over Pesach. That's what we declare, that all of our chametz in our eyes is just like dust, and that's hashbasas chametz. However, we're concerned, that's not enough. And so in addition, we do bedikas chametz, which is we search our property for chametz, and we do biur chametz, which is that we burn all the chametz that we find. When it comes to bedikas chametz, in general, it's customary to do the search, right? I mean, it's obligatory to do the search the night before Pesach. If you do the search earlier, if you do it during the day, Pesach cleaning that takes place in the weeks leading up to Pesach does not count in place of bedikas chametz. The bedikas chametz must be done on the night before Pesach. A search that's done earlier than that night doesn't really count. In addition, bedikas chametz needs to be pretty much every single piece of property that you own, that you'll be using over Pesach, must be searched for chametz. So that means that you have to search your cars, you have to search storage sheds, cabinets, etc. Any place where chametz might have been brought over the course of the year needs to be searched. Some people think that if you hide 10 pieces of bread and then you search until you find them, that you've done bedikas chametz. That does not count as bedikas chametz. It's really every place that chametz might have been done, brought during the year, needs to be searched for bedikas chametz. And even if it was cleaned earlier in the week or earlier in the month, you still have to look again and double check. Why do we hide bread before bedikas chametz if the point of the search is not to find the bread? Right. The answer is we're nervous that that we won't find anything, and then our bracha that we make on the burning the chametz will be a bracha levatala. We set a bracha for the mitzvah of burning chametz, and now we don't have any chametz to burn. So we hide the 10 pieces of bread, and that way we are pretty confident that we'll have something to burn, and therefore the bracha will not be a bracha levatala. If you're confident that you'll find chametz without hiding pieces of bread, so then your bracha won't be bracha levatala, and perhaps you don't have to hide the bread. The general meaning of the kol chamira declaration that we make at the time of biur chametz, after we've burned the chametz, we basically say any chametz that's left that I'm not aware of, that chametz is like dust for me. That the kol chamira accomplishes the hashbasas chametz. That's really its purpose, to declare all chametz that we no longer are aware of. We declare that to be ownerless and like the dust of the earth. Why do many people daven early on Shabbos, Erev Pesach? So the answer here is that on Erev Pesach, you're only allowed to eat chametz, right, up until the 10th hour, until Sof Zman Tefillah, which usually is around 10:30 or 10:45 in the morning. And so if you want to have a Shabbos meal with chametz, then you need to finish all of the chametz from the meal before that time, before the fourth hour, before whatever it is. It varies from year to year, but around 10:30. So if you want to be able to daven and come home and have your Shabbos meal and finish the chametz on time, you usually have to daven early. Those people who don't have chametz at the meal, so if you're having egg matzah and you're Ashkenazi, so again, if you're having egg matzah and you're Ashkenazi, you have to finish the egg matzah before, again, that time, you know, that time of day. So that's because Ashkenazim treat egg matzahs almost like chametz, and they don't eat it beyond, you know, the fourth hour of the day. And so again, you have to finish the meal, you know, before the sof zman achilas chametz, and that's why people daven early. Moving on from the halachos of Pesach to the halachos of Sfiras HaOmer, when do we start to count Sfiras HaOmer? That is the second day of Pesach, or the night preceding the second day of Pesach. You know, in America, right, the second day is still Yontif. In Israel, the second day is already the first day of Chol HaMoed, but it's the night preceding the second day of Pesach. We should count Sfiras HaOmer standing up. That's based on a pasuk. And the best time to count Sfiras HaOmer is right after Tzeis HaKochavim, right after three medium-sized stars you become visible, right, in a clear sky, right, which we call the disappearance of indirect sunlight, that you can no longer see the sunlight reflecting off the gases in the atmosphere. That's Tzeis HaKochavim, and as soon as possible after Tzeis HaKochavim is the best time for Sfiras HaOmer. When is the latest time to count Sfiras HaOmer with a bracha? That's, you know, the end of the night. All night long you could count Sfiras HaOmer with a bracha, but once it's daytime already, you can no longer count with a bracha. Instead, what should one do if he went all night without counting Sfiras HaOmer? So the next day he should count Sfiras HaOmer without a bracha. So if you, let's say, daven Ma'ariv too early, or you forgot to count, you know, Sfiras HaOmer at Ma'ariv, and then, you know, all night long you forgot, but then you wake up the next morning and, you know, after davening, somebody announces, if you didn't count Sfira, today is 22. So at that point, you just say, today is the 22nd day of the Omer, which is 3 weeks and 1 day of the Omer, without a bracha, and then you continue the rest of the nights as usual, with a bracha. What should one do if he went all day without counting Sfiras HaOmer? So at that point, he loses the opportunity to make a bracha on the remaining nights, and so the remaining nights and days he should count, but without a bracha. What should one do if he's not sure whether he skipped a day? I don't remember whether I counted, you know, 21 or whether I didn't count 21 yesterday. I can't remember. And so in that case, we assume that you did count, and you're allowed to continue counting with a bracha. If someone asks you, what is tonight's sfira, how should you answer and why? So you should always answer, like, last night, you know, was such and such. Don't tell them tonight's sfira, because if you tell them tonight's sfira, then you'll have done the mitzvah already without having made a bracha. And once you do the mitzvah, you can't, you know, make the bracha afterwards. A bracha on a mitzvah must be made beforehand. And so in this case, you want to wait and not do the mitzvah until you've said the bracha. So don't tell him tonight is, you know, 23, because then you'll have done the mitzvah without a bracha. Instead, say last night was 22. And then when you're ready to do the mitzvah, you'll say the bracha properly and you'll do the mitzvah with the bracha. If you counted the wrong day and remembered right away, what should you do? So you just say the right day. That's it. You say, you know, Baruch Atah Hashem, you finish the bracha, and you count, Hayom, you know, Echad V'Esrin Yom, whoops, it's 22. So just say, Hayom Shnayim V'Esrin Yom. Just correct yourself and go on, if you remembered right away. If you counted the wrong day and did not remember right away, so then when you count again, you need to repeat the bracha, because there was too large of an interruption, too big of a gap between the bracha that you made and the correct counting that you're doing. The incorrect counting was not a fulfillment of the mitzvah. The bracha that you made before you counted incorrectly can't count for your correct counting, because it might have been separated by hours, right, or distractions or whatever it was. So you say a new bracha, right, and then you count the correct count. And that's, you know, when I have this, you know, sort of riddle type of question, in what case would you say the bracha on Sfiras HaOmer twice in one night? The answer is if you said the bracha and then counted the wrong number, and then did something else, and then you remembered, so you should then you would say the bracha again, and you would end up saying the bracha twice in one night. What was the Karban Omer? Sfiras Omer is named after the Karban Omer. What was the Karban Omer? So the basic rule was is that you were not allowed to eat from the new crop in Israel, from new wheat or new barley that grew over the winter in Israel until a special Karban was brought. It was a barley Karban that came from the earliest, harvested barley, and it was called the Karban Omer. Omer is just a measurement, 1/10 of an ephah, which is like 43.2 egg volumes or something along that amount. That's how much barley you would bring, and you would bring it. When was it brought? On the second day of Pesach. So again, that's Sfiras Omer is the counting that begins once we bring the Karban Omer. We begin to count down from the Karban Omer. Why do we bring the Karban Omer? So the basic idea is, there's a number of ideas that are suggested, but the basic idea is that in Judaism, we give the first to Hashem. The first moments of our day should be devoted to davening and not to eating. The firstborn son, right, participates in Pidyon HaBen. The first, fruits are Bikurim, or Terumos and Maestros. When you earn money, right, you move to a town, right, you should build a shul, right, or buy, building for a shul before, you buy your own house. These are all ideas that the first and the best, go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so from the new harvest, the new crop, right, of grain, you give the first grain to Hashem, and only afterwards we put ourselves second. This is one of the safeguards that Judaism has against selfishness. Is that we remember always to give the first to Hashem and not to ourselves. According to the Abu Darham, why do we count Sfiras HaOmer? So the Abu Darham gave a very interesting explanation where he said that that the harvest season for a farmer is the most labor-intensive season. The farmers work very, very long hours, very, very difficult labor, and it's very easy to forget other responsibilities when you're working so long and so hard. And we know that the Chag HaShavuos is coming up. It's 49 days, 50 days right after Pesach, and we're scared that the farmer, being so caught up in the harvest season, might forget to observe. He might forget about Shavuos. So therefore, the Abu Dharam says the Torah required everybody to do Sfiras HaOmer, so that way the farmer will always remember when Shavuos is coming. That's part of how to be responsible, right? Is that when you anticipate that there's something important coming up, and you're nervous that you might forget it, remind yourself again and again as it approaches, not to forget your responsibility, and that way you will remember it. The Sefer HaChinuch gives a different explanation for why we count Sfiras HaOmer. He says it's sort of like a kala, a bride who's counting down the days to her wedding. It's something that we're excited about, something that we look forward to, something that we eagerly anticipate. We count down the days as we get closer. Shavuos, he says, is the anniversary of Kabbalah's HaTorah, of when we received the Torah. The Torah is something that we were very eager, to receive, and so we try to tap into that eagerness, and to approach, Shavuos, and to approach Torah, as something that we're excited that we can't wait to receive. And Sfiras HaOmer is a way to remind ourselves and to get into the mood. We're about to get the Torah. It's exciting. We can't wait. And Sfiras HaOmer gets us into that mood. Third reason that's given for Sfiras HaOmer is that the Jews, when they left Egypt, they were very, very perverse. They were sunk to the 49th level of Tumah and impurity. And in order to receive the Torah, they needed to work on themselves and to regain the tahara and the kedusha and the holiness of their ancestors. And so the 49 days in between Pesach and Shavuos, they use those days to work on their character traits and to perfect themselves and to, you know, to break free from the influences of Egyptian culture, the materialistic influences and the philosophical untruths that Egypt subscribed to. And each day they worked on a different midah, a different character trait, trying to perfect themselves until finally they arrived at Shavuos. And they had reached basically from the 49th level of Tumah, they reached the 49th level of Kedusha and holiness. And so as we go through Sfiras HaOmer, it's supposed to be a similar journey, where every day of Sfiras HaOmer, we pick a different character trait to work on and try to perfect ourselves, where it comes to that, character trait, whether it's, the trait of Chesed and, noticing what will make other people happy and noticing what other people need and then supplying their needs, whether it's the midah of gevura, right, which is, self-discipline and just, figuring out what the right thing is to do and then doing it no matter how uncomfortable it is, or whether it's a different, other character traits like yesod and just, making sure that that you do what what people need, even if you don't get recognition, and even if it's very tedious, and any of the other character traits, as well, there's different things to work on different nights, and the point of Sfiras HaOmer is sort of preparing ourselves to receive the Torah by working on perfecting our character. In the olden days, Sfiras HaOmer was a very festive time. The Ramban says that it's almost like Chol HaMoed in between Pesach and Shavuos. However, in more recent times, Sfiras HaOmer has become a time of mourning. And there's two customs of mourning in particular that the Kisser Shulchan Aruch points out. One of them is not getting married. The other one is not getting haircuts or shaving. Right? Of course, from there, from the not getting married, we have not listening to music and not dancing, etc. No haircuts and no shaving. Is also, become a little bit, expanded. But the basic idea is that we observe customs of mourning during Sfiras HaOmer. There are three customs about when during Sfiras HaOmer to mourn. Some people, some people observe these customs from, Pesach or from the end of Pesach until Lag BaOmer, till the day after Lag BaOmer. Other people observe the customs from the first day of Rosh Chodesh Iyar until the Shloshes Yimei Hagbalah, the 3 days prior to Shavuos, and other people observe the customs from the day after Rosh Chodesh Iyar until the day right before Shavuos, until Erev Shavuos. What the three sets of customs share in common is that all of them observe 33 days of mourning. And the reason that we observe 33 days of mourning, whether it starts earlier or later or even later than that, but it's always 33 days, is because of what happened to Rabbi Akiva's students. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000...
Yeshua Milchman, please come to the main office.
He had 12,000 pairs of students. That's 24,000 students in total. And they all died between Pesach and Shavuos. Because they did not have proper respect for one another. They did not, treat one another with the, respect that they deserved. And therefore they all died between Pesach and Shavuos, but they didn't die every single day. There were only 33 days of that period when they actually were dying. The other days, nobody died. And so that's why everyone observes 33-day period of mourning corresponding to the 33 days when Rabbi Akiva's students were dying. Again, we talked about what it means that they didn't, have respect for one another. The essence of respecting somebody is focusing on their strengths and successes as opposed to focusing on their failures and their flaws. So Rabbi Akiva's students, according to some Bali Musar, he paired up, students so that each one would have a positive, a strength that sort of rectified the other student's flaws. So there might be one student who is very, generous, and he'll be paired with a student who's stingy, but the stingy student might be very calm, while the generous one, like, is very, very angry. And so the hope was is that the stingy student would learn generosity from his chavrusa, and the angry one would learn calmness from his chavrusa, right? But instead of looking at one another and saying, wow, look what I can learn from him, instead they looked at one another and said, that guy, he's so stingy. There's nothing I could possibly have, nothing he could possibly teach me, right? It would be dangerous for me to try to emulate him. And so overlooking the fact that he's also a really calm, guy. And so they basically focused on one another's failures and weaknesses instead of focusing on their strengths and successes. And that was a failure, to have kavod and respect for one another. There's other theories, as well. I push myself very hard, therefore I can push my chavrusa very hard. No, that's not right. You can't treat others like you treat yourself. You might beat yourself up. You can't beat somebody else up. It's a common, misconception, but it's a failure to respect others, to demand as much of them as you demand of yourself. Demand as much of them as is right for them, but not don't demand, don't they're not you, they're somebody else. So again, there's a lot of different theories about what led them to do what they did, but at the core of it is that they did not respect one another properly. There's a number of other tragedies that are associated with Sfiras HaOmer. One of them was the Bar Kokhba rebellion. It was after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and there was a guy named Shimon Bar Kokhba who rebelled against the Roman Empire. Rabbi Akiva famously thought that he had the possibility of being Mashiach, but Bar Kokhba, unfortunately, he believed that God had abandoned him and that he was only victorious because of his own strength and prowess in battle, and neglecting all of the miracles that happened to him and ascribing them, to nature or to his own, strength and preparedness, eventually led him to slip up, and he was defeated by the Romans, and his entire army was killed in a very tragic, way, and the Romans didn't even let us bury the soldiers. And so that's a tragedy that's also associated with Sfiras HaOmer, and part of the mourning during Sfira, according to some, is mourning for the tragedy of Bar Kokhba's failed rebellion. The Crusades is another tragedy that we mourn during this particular season of Sfiras HaOmer. The armies of the Crusades, set off, as soon as the winter was over in the spring. That's the best time to travel. It's also, around the season when a lot of anti-Semitic incitement, happens because of various religious observances around this time of year. And so the Crusaders, began their journey by pillaging and massacring Jewish communities that were on the route. And so many communities in Western Europe were massacred during this time of year by the Crusaders. And so we mourn for them during Sfiras HaOmer as well. Another tragedy that we mourn for during Sfiras HaOmer are the Khmelnytsky massacres. There was a Kazakh from Ukraine named Bogdan Khmelnytsky, and he revolted together with the Kazakhs against the Polish overlords of Ukraine. And that revolt as well, for a combination of religious and political reasons, resulted in the massacre of many, many Jewish towns and villages in the Ukraine. And so that's another thing that happened around this time of year. And so the mourning during Sfira also commemorates the massacres of the Khmelnytsky Kazakhs in their revolt to free Ukraine. Again, what for tragedies we have, Rabbi Akiva's students, death and the Bar Kokhba rebellion and the Crusades, the Khmelnytsky massacres, and all of them, were very concentrated around this time, and that's why we mourn for them during Sfira. As we approached Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaAtzma'ut, we talked about the halachos of self-defense and how the state of Israel was founded in order to save Jewish lives and to make Jews safe no matter where they are, among many other good reasons. That was one of the big things, is to protect Jews all over the world. And so we talked a little bit about the various mitzvos associated with self-defense. So one of those mitzvos is lo tikhu kofer al nefesh rotzeach, which means that if somebody commits murder, You're not allowed to absolve them of guilt. You're not allowed to say, oh, just pay a little ransom to the family of the victim, and then you're fine. The Torah says you cannot pay a ransom and then let a murderer go free. The only possible way for a murderer to atone for snuffing out someone's life is by submitting to the death penalty. We also talked about the mitzvah of lo tamur al dam riacha, which means if you see somebody who's in danger, whether it's somebody who's drowning or somebody who's being attacked, you know, by bandits or by wild animals, it's a mitzvah to do whatever you can.
Attention, Lego Builders Club will be meeting in room 206 at 1220. Lego Builders in room 206 at 1220. Also, must meet up tonight is live and in person in the dining room, 545 to 645. More.